everyone. My name is Matt Oberle, and the following podcast has been created for my final project in SPE 701, Cognitive Processes, Research-Based Brain Studies for the Educator at St. Joseph's University. The podcast will be comprised of six parts, the first being the topic and why I selected it, the second being a personal experience I have with the topic, the third will be a recent article about this topic, the fourth will be how it relates to the brain, the fifth will be the topic's implications on learning, and finally, the sixth will be on some recommendations that I have from this topic. I chose the video Movement and the Brain because I've always valued the role that athletic development can play in the overall growth and development of individuals. Spent the better part of my adult life either competing in sports or working as a coach, so I wanted to extend my knowledge of the connection between movement and learning. In terms of personal experience with movement and the brain, I have numerous personal experiences as both a learner and a coach within this topic. In my time as a student from elementary school through college, I participated in numerous team and individual sports. While I wouldn't necessarily think of myself as a bodily kinesthetic learner, I've always felt the time I spent working out or playing sports was a crucial part of my learning process. The time spent competing, running, walking, lifting weights, or climbing allows me to take the time to digest what I was learning. After moving around, I may have felt physically tired, but often found that I was more prepared to return to studying and learning. In my time competing, I made and strengthened countless connections between what I was learning outside of the classroom or outside of the sport in the classroom. I also found myself comparing and contrasting what I was learning in the classroom to whatever activity I was currently engaged in. A great example of this occurred during a rock climbing session this past winter. After unsuccessfully engaging in a particularly challenging bouldering route dozens of times, I had to step back and really analyze each of my movements. I watched other climbers compete the route and made adjustments to my own approach at each stage of the climbing route. Over time, the challenging sections became easier to complete, and I was eventually able to string together the correct sequence to complete my task. I came home and completed a module for this exact class about teenage neural connections and realized that the way I learned the route is the same way that teens develop neural connections and pathways. While I would have read about the ways neural pathways develop in teens regardless, having engaged in a physical process that connected to the topic really solidified my learning. One article that really highlights both the scientific underpinnings of this topic and provides actionable suggestions comes from a 2019 study by Rudd, O'Callaghan, and Williams. In that 2019 article published in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health, it was entitled Physical Education Pedagogies Built Upon Theories of Movement Learning. How can environmental constraints be manipulated to improve children's executive function and self-regulation skills? Well, in this article, they explore the relationship between executive functioning, self-regulation, and physical movement. In the report, they lament the de-emphasis of physical education in public schools, noting specifically that a growing body of evidence demonstrates that regular physical activity leads to better circulation and improved oxygen supply to the brain. They also note that learning complex movements facilitates greater improvement to cognitive abilities compared to computer-based cognitive training interventions. In this journal article, the authors argue that the most important cognitive skill for academic success is the development of executive functioning. They go on to note that this includes three main areas: in inhibitory control, working memory, and in cognitive flexibility. These areas are directly related to the prefrontal cortex systems and have direct correlations with academic achievement. The authors go on to argue that increased physical activity and movement can enrich and improve executive functioning skills. They note that the three areas of executive functioning work collaboratively and independently throughout physical activity in the process of decision-making, planning, problem-solving, attending, perfecting, acting on, and coordinating actions. Students who engage in physical activities and movement are provided with more opportunities to develop the neural pathways associated with the acquisition of knowledge. The more opportunities the student has, the more likely they will be able to develop their executive functioning skills. Physical movement and activity can train the brain to process information received through the prefrontal cortex in the limbic system more rapidly and efficiently. Given what we know about the development of the adolescent brain, the more opportunities a learner has to develop efficient and positive neural pathways and to prune less efficient and negative pathways, the more developed their executive functioning skills will be. The adolescent brain is seeking to make sense of its place in the world and to test its boundaries. Physical movement and activity can be a great way for this to happen in a comparatively controlled environment, in a way that provides immediate and direct feedback, and in a way that learners want to participate in. In terms of what we've talked about and the implications it has on learning, I kind of struggled with this at first, but after reading some books, I found something that kind of made sense to me, and I hope you can appreciate it. I'm a big fan of Albert Camus, the famous French-Algerian philosopher, and I've read most of his works, and I've really been impacted and affected by it. Well, one of my favorite quotes that he ever had was, one time he wrote that, and this is the direct quote from him, "What I know most surely about morality and the duty of man, I owe to sport, and I learned it in the RUA," which was his youth soccer team. In another correspondence with a friend of his, when asked whether he preferred football or theater, Camus almost immediately responded, "Football," without hesitation. And while he was specifically focusing on the role that sports can play in the development of moral system, I think that his thoughts can serve to illustrate the deep connections between physical movement and its impact on the brain, specifically on how physical movement can help individuals learn to make sense of really complex and abstract concepts in very concrete and tangible ways. And I think that that can serve to help them turn into lifelong learners. Another connection that I had when thinking about this topic was about a book I read about a man named Bob Hurley, who's widely regarded as the most successful high school basketball coach in history. He coached in Jersey City, New Jersey, in a school that was widely known for serving some of the poorest communities in the country. And in some of the reflections, they had interviewed some of his former players, and one of them became a fire captain and recalled that the time spent in Coach Hurley's gym taught him how to be a quick and divisive thinker, a skill which he noted would save his life on several occasions during firefights. And I thought that that really kind of illustrated the idea that physical movement and exercise can help the brain create neural pathways for quick and decisive problem solving across disciplines. Finally, in terms of recommendations on how learning in school can be improved based on my understanding of the brain and movement, I think there are a couple ones that really stick out as important. The first would be to echo the recommendations of the authors of the cited study that I talked about earlier. In their conclusions from that study, they write specifically that evidence suggests that across education levels, physical education and movement-based activities are being cut from curriculum in favor of additional classroom time to be spent on English and math instruction. They go on to note, however, that across education levels, students have increased outcomes across all demographic subgroups when physical education is a part of the curriculum. They also note that several studies have shown that teachers who incorporate physical movement into their lessons often see higher measurable student outcomes at the assessment portion. I think that given this evidence, they advocate for actually increasing the amount of time we spend in physical movement. They specifically note that both unstructured movement, which we might see during recess or free play, and structured movement, which could be during a teacher-planned or coached activity, both serve to benefit students' neural developments and lead to increased outcomes. Off of all these, I would kind of recommend two main things. First, at the classroom level, I would encourage teachers to consider how they can incorporate physical activity into their lesson. If students can move around during activities or participate in lessons that force them to consider the physical space around them and how they will move through it, they will utilize more parts of their prefrontal and limbic systems, which will serve to strengthen their executive functioning. And then I would say at the administrative or the policy-based level, I would encourage principals to strengthen physical education programs and to facilitate school-wide activities or incentives that involve movement. whether that's through developing professional development trainings on increasing movement in the classroom, providing incentives for teachers to utilize movement-based resources, or really kind of something else, basically anything that would encourage movement, the evidence suggests that moving kids are both happy and more likely to learn.